From Pacifica, this is Democracy Now! Tens of thousands of protesters gather in Jena, Louisiana, to demand justice for the Jena Six. It was one of the largest civil rights rallies in the South since the 1960s. We'll speak with the Reverend Al Sharpton, parents of the Jena Six, and broadcast the sounds and voices of the historic rally.
Quite honestly, it seems to me that this is the beginning of a movement that started 10 years ago with the Million Man March. It's the beginning, a re-beginning, of a movement to make sure that the powers that be recognize that it comes to a point when you just say enough is enough.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Tens of thousands of protesters gathered in the town of Jena, Louisiana, Thursday to demand justice for the Jena Six, one of the largest civil rights rallies the South has seen since the 1960s. State police estimated as many as 60,000 people took part. Buses from across the country made the trip to Louisiana. They were filled with people demanding justice for the six African-American teenagers who have been facing a total of more than 100 years in prison for a schoolyard fight. We'll have more coverage from Jena after headlines. In Iraq, the private security firm Blackwater USA is reportedly back on the streets of Baghdad despite an announced ban on its activities. The Iraqi government said it had revoked Blackwater's license this week after its guards killed up to 28 Iraqis in an unprovoked mass shooting. But a Pentagon spokesperson said today Blackwater is guarding diplomatic convoys following talks with the Iraqi government. The news comes as Iraq's Interior Ministry is calling for radical changes in the role of private security in Iraq. In a new report, the ministry says Iraqi companies should replace firms like Blackwater and that the Iraqi government should scrap a law that's granted those firms immunity. Blackwater's activities are expected to come under further scrutiny today at a House Oversight Committee hearing on Capitol Hill. In other Iraq news, the Pentagon's claiming violence there has fallen to its lowest level since before the pivotal 2006 attack on the Al-Askari Mosque in Samarra. This is Lieutenant General Raymond Odierno.
Attacks in Baghdad have reached the lowest levels this year and continue to trend downward from pre-Fard al-Qunun levels. Civilian casualties have also dropped dramatically, from a high of about 32 per day to 12 per day.
Odierno did not cite many specific figures to back his claims. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, the Senate's overwhelmingly rejected a measure that would cut off funding for combat operations in Iraq by next June. The final vote was 70 to 28. Meanwhile, senators on both sides of the aisle widely supported a measure to condemn an anti-war newspaper ad by the advocacy group MoveOn.org. The ad in question referred to General David Petraeus as General Betrayus. The final vote was 72 to 25. 23 Democrats joined Republicans to support the resolution. New details have emerged indicating a White House connection to Israel's bombing of a target in Syria earlier this month. The Washington Post is reporting Israel launched the attack after sharing intelligence with the Bush administration that North Korean nuclear experts were in Syria collaborating on an alleged nuclear site. There has been little evidence of any nuclear activity so far. Both Syria and North Korea deny working on a nuclear program. The news comes as the former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appeared to become the first Israeli politician to publicly confirm the attack took place. In a television interview, Netanyahu bragged he had been told of the operation beforehand and had given it his endorsement. Meanwhile, in the occupied territories, a 16-year-old Palestinian boy died Thursday after being run over by an Israeli military bulldozer in the Gaza Strip. Mahmoud Kayed was crushed to death when the bulldozer sped towards a group of Palestinian youths throwing rocks at invading Israeli troops. Meanwhile, new figures show Israel has added dozens of new roadblocks restricting Palestinian movement in the West Bank, despite repeated promises to scale them down. According to the United Nations, the number of West Bank roadblocks has increased by 50% over 2 years ago. President Bush has renewed a threat to veto a bill expanding health insurance for millions of American children. The state child health insurance program, known as SCHIP, expires later this month. Lawmakers have proposed to spend $35 billion to cover an additional 4 million children over the 6.6 million already enrolled. The money would come mostly through a tax increase on cigarettes. The White House wants to limit the increase to just $5 billion. On Thursday, President Bush called the proposed expansion a step toward federalization of health care and promised a veto. The International Criminal Court is renewing calls for Sudan to hand over a government minister accused of war crimes in Darfur. Sudanese humanitarian minister Ahmad Haroun was charged with organizing and arming militias implicated in attacks on whole villages. On Thursday, prosecutor Luis Moreno Ocampo called for his arrest.
The governor of the Sudan has the duty and the ability to arrest Haroun and transfer them to the court in The Hague. However, they are denying Ahmed Haroun crimes. The world cannot share in this denial.
An estimated 200,000 people have died and more than 2 million displaced in the four-year-old conflict between government-backed militias and rebel groups. On Thursday, Sudan's ambassador to the UN said no Sudanese official would be handed over.
We said it to him. And we said it to the Secretary General, and we said it to whoever asked us about this. In no way we are going to surrender any of our citizens to be prosecuted abroad. If there are any crimes, the place is Sudan, and the people to do that is the Sudanese judicial system.
A new Human Rights Watch report says violence in Darfur has worsened over the past year. Human Rights Watch Africa director Peter Takarambudi blamed Sudan's support for militias.
The massive, large-scale suffering of the people of Darfur continues in 2007 because the government, which is primarily responsible for having initiated this massive suffering, is still playing its game. Though the situation is somewhat complicated by the fact that you have a wide range of other actors who are also adding to the massive suffering. The rebels have splintered into a myriad of groupings which are fighting among themselves.
Back in the United States, Newsweek magazine is reporting the nation's largest telecom companies have teamed with the White House for a secretive lobbying campaign asking Congress to dismiss all private lawsuits over the company's involvement in warrantless spying. The campaign is said to be intensifying amidst industry fears a San Francisco appeals court will allow the lawsuits to proceed. Two former top officials under former President George H.W. Bush are playing leading roles. Former Attorney General William Barr is Verizon's general counsel, while former Deputy Chief of Staff James Ciccone is a senior executive at AT&T. Director of National Intelligence Mike McConnell recently warned the private suits have the potential to bankrupt the companies involved. And in a correction on an earlier news story, it is the Senate that is going to be holding a hearing today on Blackwater. Among those who will be testifying are Democracy Now! Correspondent Jeremy Scahill, who is author of the book Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army, and Katie Helveston. She's the mother of Scotty Helveston, who was one of the Blackwater employees who died in Fallujah. The Helveston family, along with the other parents, families of the four who died in Fallujah, have sued Blackwater. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Tens of thousands of protesters gathered Thursday in the town of Jena, Louisiana, to demand justice for the Jena Six, the six African-American teenagers who face a total of over 100 years in prison for allegedly beating a white student in a schoolyard fight. The fight occurred after white students hung nooses from a tree at the school. Thursday's protest was one of the largest civil rights rallies in the South since the 60s. According to the Associated Press, the state police estimated as many as 60,000 people took part in a series of rallies and marches in Jena, a town of just 3,000 residents. The Reverend Al Sharpton declared Jena to be the beginning of the 21st century civil rights movement. The protest was scheduled to coincide with the sentencing of Michael Bell, who was convicted by an all-white jury of aggravated assault. But last week, Bell's conviction was thrown out because he was inappropriately tried as an adult, according to a Louisiana appeals court. Bell remains in jail, where he's been held since December, but a bond hearing has been scheduled for 10 o'clock this morning. Today, we'll be speaking with parents of the Jena Six, as well as the Reverend Al Sharpton. But first, we go to a piece produced by Rick Rowley and Jackie Suin of Big Noise Films. It's narrated by Rick Rowley of yesterday's march.
At 4:30 a.m., the buses began arriving from across the country, and they poured in all morning long. The tiny town of Jena, Louisiana, population 3,000, braced itself for the largest civil rights march it had ever seen. Downtown businesses closed, and the local paper warned of outsiders coming in and causing trouble. But black residents welcomed the demonstrators.
Welcome. I welcome them all. Yeah, it's a good thing. I mean, it haven't happened in this area since back in the 60s, you know, the protesting and marching. But it's good for the nation to see that we can still come together in the South and protest against the injustice.
Jena became a nationwide symbol for racism in the criminal justice system when six black students faced life sentences on attempted murder charges after a schoolyard fight that injured a white student. Outcry around the case grew when it was revealed that the fight occurred in the context of rising racial tensions at the school, where nooses were found hanging from a tree in the schoolyard after black students attempted to sit in the traditionally all-white area. When the first defendant was found guilty of second-degree battery and conspiracy by an all-white jury, Thursday's protest was planned to coincide with his sentencing hearing. The case has become a symbol of racial bias in the criminal justice system around the country.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Martin Luther King did say that we're all ignorance triply tied, you know, together. And so justice in Jena, for us, is justice anywhere in the country. We're here because we care about these kids, and it doesn't matter where they were. Where they would be in Alaska, we'll still go out there to make sure that our voices are heard. I feel like the DA needs to know that we care about these kids. The town people need to know we care about these kids, and we will not allow injustice to go unchecked anywhere in the country. We understand that, you know, no town would like 50,000 people to walk in one morning. But you know, unfortunately, though, this is part of America. And since it's part of America, we have a right to come anywhere that we want to. You know, and we have a right to speak against injustice anywhere, and that's why we're here. So we're sorry, but the DA should have known that when he overcharged those kids and put them through what they've been through. Michael Bell has been in jail since January or December. He should have known that, and now he does. Justice for the Jena Six, justice for kids everywhere.
An estimated 40,000 to 60,000 protesters marched in Jena on Thursday, demanding that all charges be dropped against the Jena Six. They rallied in front of the courthouse where the cases are being tried and marched to Jena High School in the spot where the now famous tree once stood. The school had cut the tree down, removed the stump, and smoothed the ground over, but demonstrators marked the spot where it once stood. This place, which was a symbol of racism nationwide, brought together what many hope will be a new movement for racial justice in America.
So we got six young African-American students who are going to end up statistics and not even be able to have the opportunity to pursue an educational career at this point. We're talking about 1 to 2 life sentences, which is unheard of for a schoolyard brawl. So it's definitely some injustice, and we want to definitely show support and show that educated young men and women will stand for social injustice in this era. The civil rights era is not dead. It's just a whole nother movement that's about to happen. We have brothers and sisters from everywhere, so it's a beautiful thing to see beautiful, bright faces, all different races, creeds, nationalities. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. This is what it should be on a daily basis.
A revolution, definitely a revolution.
And that piece produced by Rick Rowley and Jackie Suin of Big Noise Films. Civil rights leaders from across the country, including the Reverend Jesse Jackson, the Reverend Al Sharpton, and Congressmember Maxine Waters, traveled to Jena to take part in Thursday March. This is the Reverend Al Sharpton.
This is the beginning of the 21st century civil rights movement. In the 20th century, we had to fight for where we sat on the bus. Now we've got to fight on how we sit in a courtroom. We've gone from plantations to penitentiaries, where they have tried to create a criminal justice system that particularly targets our young black men. And now we sit and stand in a city that says it's a prank to hang a hangman's noose, but that it is attempted murder to have a fight. We cannot sit by silently. That's why we came, and that's why we intend to keep coming. We're going from here to Washington, D.C. We're going to change the federal laws. You think we brought thousands to Gina? You wait till we go to D.C. and bring the whole case. Because there are Ginas all over America. There's Ginas in New York. There's Ginas in Atlanta. There's Ginas in Florida. There's Ginas all over Texas. We're going to coordinate Detroit, Cleveland. Everywhere there's a Gina, we're going right to the nation's capital, just like Dr. King did a generation ago. We are going back a generation later. Martin Luther King Jr. and others faced Jim Crow. We come to Gina to face James Crow Jr. Esquire. He's a little more educated, a little more polished, but it's the same courthouse steps used to beat down our people. And just like our daddies beat Jim Crow, we will win the victory over James Crow Jr.
The Reverend Al Sharpton speaking yesterday at the massive rally in Gina, Louisiana. He joins us on the phone now from Baton Rouge. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Reverend Sharpton.
Good morning, Amy.
What is the latest news you have? We understand there'll be a bond hearing for Michael Bell this morning at 10 o'clock.
There will be a bond hearing in the context of a hearing to have the judge recuse himself. And I've talked throughout the night with the attorneys. We are hopeful and prayerful. Marcus Jones and Melissa Bell, the parents of Michael Bell, and I might say the parents of the other five, because these families have stuck together since this began a year ago. And we are hopeful that maybe some sanity would come and it could lead to Michael's release. Certainly, he should not have been in jail this long. Let us remember that a week ago it was overturned that he should never have been tried as an adult, which was the first point that was made in his particular case. I got involved in June. I've been there to see Michael three times, and I can tell you that that was a tremendous victory in the courtroom there, thanks to his lawyers. And now he's still a week later, still in jail, even after the overturning of the original adult trial.
Reverend Sharpton, I want to go back to this issue of the judge. What do you mean you want the judge to recuse himself?
The lawyer's point is that the judge himself, who tried the case as an adult and who ruled that he must be tried as an adult, has now been overturned. For this judge to sit on the further motions and all they're saying it has shown bias. Well, not in the judgment of the attorneys, and many of us certainly agree, will not give a fair and balanced a judicial outcome for Michael. So they want a new judge to handle this and go forward into the remaining juvenile charges. That is why there's a hearing on the judge stepping aside, as well as a bond based on the new status of Michael Bell, being that Michael Bell is no longer being charged as an adult.
What about the DA? What about Reed Walters?
Well, Reed Walker, our organization, National Action Network, filed a formal complaint about 10 days ago against him in Baton Rouge. One of the reasons I'm in Baton Rouge today, aside from the fact that Michael may be released, is that I want to follow up on when they're going to schedule proceedings on our complaint. Reed Walker has been, in our judgment, guilty.
Reed Walters.
Reed Walker has
Walters.
I'm sorry, Walters, has been guilty of prosecutorial. Yeah, now I'm handed the complaint. You're correct. Reed Walters has been guilty of prosecutorial misconduct in the filing the National Action Network has done. He has been the DA that was there throughout all of these incidents. And I think one of the mistakes the media is making is they're saying that some and Gina are saying that there was no direct connection between the fight that Gina Six were indicted for and the hangman noose. Our argument is that one does not have to prove that one way or another. The fact is that if you have a prosecutor that decided that he could not prosecute the students, the white students that hung the nooses because a hate crime, you must be an adult according to Louisiana law, and these were juveniles. Yet he felt that the black kids in the fight who were the same age, going to the same school, were adults. How do you have white kids, juveniles, black kids, adults, same age, same school? The fact that he did not in any firm way prosecute the young white student that had a shotgun on school ground that threatening to black students, that there was a black student that was beaten at a party that he was invited to by a white female, and that person, the white student, was given a $100 ticket, tantamount to a traffic ticket. So when you have a pattern of prosecutorial behavior that he will go after blacks harshly, charge them initially with attempted murder as adults for a schoolyard brawl, and relatively nothing on the side of white students, that he must at least have to come before the authorities here in Baton Rouge, which is the state capital, and explain his prosecutorial behavior. Secondly, we're going to Washington, D.C. next week, and we're bringing some of the parents to meet with members of Congress, and we have been assured by Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee that marched with us yesterday that she will bring us to the Judiciary Committee to try to get hearings on this. So far, Mr. Walters has not answered any questions. Well, he will have to answer an ethics committee here in Baton Rouge, and he will have to answer if the Judiciary Committee in the United States Congress brings him to Washington. He has no choice but to answer questions. He ought to be removed. I do not believe he can answer the questions. I do not believe that he can support his arguments. So we must, as was done a generation or two ago before my time, when they brought the federal government in to protect our people in the South, we must do likewise in 2007.
Reverend Sharpton, we went to Gina a few weeks ago, and one of the people we talked to was a school board member. His name was Billy Fowler. He's well known in the community, a white member of the school board. And when six of the 10 members of the school board were brand new last January, it was the time that the students were expelled, and they appealed their expulsion to the school board. The school did an investigation. Three people were appointed to do the investigation. The school board members wanted to look at the investigation and decide whether to uphold the expulsion. But the school attorney told them they couldn't look at their own school investigation because it would jeopardize the criminal investigation. The school attorney was none other than Reed Walters, both the school attorney and also the district attorney, the man who is going after, who is prosecuting the six young African-American students.
That is part of our complaint, because what makes that, and you're absolutely correct on the facts, what makes that even more egregious is that when he told them it would interfere with the criminal proceedings, he was over the criminal proceedings, which meant at best he had a conflict of interest either as the district attorney or as the attorney to the school board. And it is clear that he is the one that was determined to prosecute these young men as adults. He was determined to, in many ways, allow those that had in the initial hate crime culprits to walk away with no penalty in terms of overturning they're being expelled from school. People must remember around the country, Amy, that listen to your show, that these white students suffered nothing for hanging those nooses, and this whole idea that it was a prank clearly is an outrageous cover-up of a racist act. What prank? They did it only after a black student sat under that tree. This meant clearly they were responding under that tree. There's nothing prankish about that.
Reverend Sharpton, we want to ask you to stay for a few more minutes. We're going to break for 60 seconds, come back, and then we want to play a clip from the radio show of David Duke, the Louisiana resident who got about 60% of the vote in LaSalle Parish. This is where Gina is. We're talking to the Reverend Al Sharpton. We'll be back in a minute.
This is Papa J, 48, and this song is dedicated to the Gen 6, to the fathers, the mothers, the sisters and brothers, to the aunts and uncles, the grandparents, to all their friends and their fellow students, and also to the frontline soldiers who work diligently every day to see them free. This is for you. You missed the day when blacks were just cotton pickers. Now you straight work without your sheets. And how about your frontline soldier, District Attorney Reed, working in shadow, General Robert E. Lee, working on behalf of evil corporations to destroy the black man and his seed. That's what the six and Jenna represent to me. It's all about corporate greed and corporate slavery and your wicked seed and your evil deeds. Always on a killing spree. You wonder why the world's your enemy. You gotta change when people's gonna experience true democracy and set them Jenna boys free.
There ain't no justice in Jenna. No justice
for you. Papa J, 48. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. One vocal critic of Thursday's protest was David Duke, a Louisiana resident, former grand wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. In 1991, white residents of Gina overwhelmingly voted for David Duke when he ran for Louisiana governor.
This is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, no matter where they may live around the world. Today, I have an important program. Today, the city of Gina, Louisiana, is being besieged, is being invaded by thousands of thugs demanding that a specific black criminal be let out of jail. He and his cohorts who committed a vicious hate crime against a white student in that city. The people of Gina, the people of Louisiana, and I are not racist. We simply want justice to be done. We understand that white people in America have lost our basic civil rights. Whites are now deprived of human rights by racial discrimination and jobs, promotions, scholarships, college admittance, and in many other programs. More importantly, whites are increasingly victims of black racial violence and hate crimes.
You've been listening to an excerpt of a radio program by David Duke, the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. Reverend Al Sharpton, your response.
Well, I think clearly anyone that was the Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan to say that he is not a racist and that those that think his way are not racist is so absurd it doesn't even is not even worthy of a remark from me or a comment from me. Obviously, David Duke and that whole kind of person is the problem here. You have a Klan mentality that does not feel that white students should be in any way penalized for the violence that happened, that they perpetrated on these black students, that anything should happen to those that hung the noose. They clearly have no problem with having a tree in a public schoolyard that only whites could sit under. Let us not forget, race was brought into this when you had a tree only for white students. And when a black student sat under the tree after questioning that, that was responded to by hangman nooses. Race did not come into this from six black students 2-3 months later. Race did not come into this by those of us that came in for the last several months or the tens of thousands yesterday. It was brought in by the tree and the hangman noose. And for them to try in any way change the facts only shows the typical demagoguery the Klan has always played to try to whip up elements of the white community that are not already with them and may not understand the facts.
Reverend Sharpton, I spoke with Kelly Barker, Justin Barker's mother. Justin Barker is the young white man who was beaten up, the white student, in the Gina schoolyard. She is manager at the Super Walmart in town in Gina. I then talked with her and her husband, David Barker, on the phone. They were very upset about people saying, free the Gina Six. They were saying, should they get no punishment for beating up our son? Your response to that?
The response is very simple. Michael Bell has done 10 months in jail as an adult that even the Louisiana courts are saying he should not have been tried to and tried with. I think that, one, no one ever said that we condone schoolyard fights, but that's what it was. And the punishment should fit a schoolyard fight. Had these young men been dealt with in juvenile courts in a regular proceeding for juveniles like any other juveniles, including the white students that pulled the gun, the shotgun at the school, and the white students that beat up, I believe it was young Mr. Bailey at the party, I don't think there would have ever been an issue local or national. What I think she is not mindful of is that is not the case. It is the imbalance of justice, the imbalance of the charges that raised the outcry. So I think that if she had said, yes, they should be punished, but he's done 10 months in jail as an adult and even the courts disagree, I think she would have had more credibility. But to have a young man still sitting in jail 10 months later in adult jail and to act like there's been no punishment, I think takes a lot of credibility away from their kind of outrage that somebody is not paid for a fight in the schoolyard with their son. No one does not in any way condone her son or any other son being beaten up. But we don't condone Bailey getting beat up at a party. We don't condone young black students being confronted with a shotgun. And we don't condone black students told you can't sit under a tree or we're going to learn hang lynch signs or lynch symbols up on their tree.
We're talking to Reverend Al Sharpton. What do you know of an FBI investigation and report?
I know that we talked to Martin Luther King III, who, along with Michael Basden, really helped to organize and call yesterday's rally. He and I had a long, lengthy conversation with the U.S. attorney who is over that area, Mr. Washington, who is black, by the way. And he told us there was some review. I don't think it was a detailed investigation. And he said that the review, in part, was that the state law banned the prosecution of juveniles, which is why we didn't understand, and in terms of the hate crime that would be, which is why we didn't understand why these young white students were deemed juveniles and the black students, same age, same school, deemed adults. He also told us there were some other findings in their review that barred federal intervention at that time. We argued against that. And that is why we're going to Washington to members of Congress to press that for a full Justice Department involved in the investigation, not just a surface review.
Reverend Al Sharpton, I want to thank you for being with us, speaking to us from Baton Rouge. Yesterday, he was in Gina, Louisiana, where one of the largest rallies in the South was held in decades. By estimates of the police and AP and different media reports, between 40 and 60,000 people marching in this small Louisiana town of just over 3,000 people. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Amy.
As we go now to Gina, Louisiana, where we're joined by two mothers of the Gina Six. Casepla Bailey is the mother of Robert Bailey. Tina Jones is the mother of Bryant Purvis. We begin with Casepla Bailey. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! It's great.
Good morning.
It's great to have you both with us. Can you talk about your reaction, Casepla, to this march yesterday? What did it mean to you? Describe what happened through the day.
Well, it meant a great deal to me. It was very outstanding to see so many number of people from all over the country to come in support of our children, as well as injustice of all children in the state of Louisiana. So I found it very remarkable and very interesting that these people would take time out from their day to come to Gina, Louisiana, for something that's so important in our time right now.
Tina Jones, what about you? What was your reaction to yesterday's protest?
I was overwhelmed by the numerous amount of support that came in for us, and to march to the place where all this unjust stuff took place was remarkable. You know, we walked to the school and everybody got a look firsthand at where the injustice actually first took place with our kids.
Can you describe the church that you're standing in front of, the Antioch Baptist Church, and how it fits into the story, the meeting place soon after the nooses were hung of the Black community deeply concerned about what was happening and how to deal with the racial tension in this community of, 85% white? Were either of you at that meeting? And whether you were or not, what happened then?
When Tina. All this took place, we're standing in front of the church where the pastor, Brother Moran, offered this church for us, you know, to have our meetings and stuff, because when we first started this, everybody was kind of reluctant to let us use their church or building, you know, to hold meetings and everything. But Moran, he stood up and allowed us to come here and have meetings, and this is where we're standing this morning. And to this day, he's still behind us.
Tina, your brother is Justin Hatcher?
Jason
Hatcher, Dallas Cowboys, professional football player. Was he in the march yesterday?
No, he wasn't. He had to attend a game that he's going to be doing this weekend, so he was unable to attend.
He got a key to the city, was an awarded a key to the city of Gina, where you both grew up. Your son is now living with him in Dallas?
Yes.
Tell us about your son. Your son is the only one of the Gina Six who has not yet been arraigned. Is that right?
Yes. Currently, he's still under the murder charges, but he do have a court date November 7. The lawyer filed motions to arraign him, drop the charges, or produce evidence. So we're hopeful that something will come out good in this case on that day.
Tell us about your son, Brian Purvis, and tell us what you understand happened, how he has responded to this, and what it means for him to be living in Dallas and not in Gina right now.
Brian is currently back in school. He's in Dallas going to school, but he did come down and attend the rally. He'll be leaving out later today. And he was overwhelmed by the numerous amount of support that he's gotten. We don't try to bother him with all the questions and stuff. We try to let him keep his life as normal as possible. You know, that's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. How old is Brian?
Brian is 18.
And when this happened?
Ma'am?
He was 18 at the time this happened?
Oh, he was 17 when it happened, but he's had a birthday since then.
Mm-hmm. And what was your reaction to the Louisiana Appeals Court throwing out Michael Bell's conviction, saying he shouldn't have been tried as an adult?
I think that's a step in the right direction. They put it back in juvenile, where it should have been in the first place. So we're hopeful that, you know, things are changing. It's a slow process, but it's working in our favor. Mm.
Kasepla Bailey, your son, Robert Bailey, is the young man who, before the fight of December 4th, was beaten up himself. Is that right?
Yes, ma'am.
What happened?
Well, at this present time, I'm unable to speak on that matter due to future court dates.
How has this yesterday's protest affected Robert? Was he a part of the marches yesterday?
Well, it has affected Robert tremendously. He was very proud that so many people have come out in support of those young athletes here in Gina. And Robert was not in attendance at the rally, because, you know, due to the numerous amount of persons there in the rally. But he is very thankful and very grateful to each and everyone who have come out in support of him as well as his friends in this matter.
Mm-hmm. And Kasepla, what do you say to those who say this is a bunch of outsiders coming in? Everything was fine in Gina before they started marching on our town.
Well, I like to say that everything wasn't fine in Gina. That's why the outsiders are here, and that's why everything have gone up so tremendously within the last few months. So I like to applaud those people that have come here from the outside to come in and to support us and to help us and assist us in this matter. So I like to say hats off to those persons.
How did you organize? I mean, from December 4th, from the time when the fight took place, the kids were jailed. How did you get word out? It's now almost 10 months later.
Well, the word got out that I received a phone call from Mr. Jason Williamson with the Juvenile Justice Project out of New Orleans, who contacted Dr. Alan Bean from Tulia, Texas, who came, who was invited in by family members to come in and do a formal investigation. He's not a detective. He's not a lawyer, but he is an outstanding young man, who have come in and assisted us. And from that point on, things have just gone straight up to the roof with the BBC coming in doing a documentary on racism in the South, particularly in Gina, Louisiana. So that's, you know, a lot of those avenues which have brought us forth to this point in time right now.
Kasepla Bailey and Tina Jones, I'd like to ask you to stay with us. We're going to go to break, and then we're going to play some of the voices of the protests yesterday, one of the largest rallies in the South in decades. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. We'll be back in a minute.
Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Democracy here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. We're broadcasting on over 500 stations across the country, on Pacifica and NPR stations, low-power FM, college and community radio stations, on public access TV and PBS TV stations, and both TV satellite networks, on Dish Network Channel 9415 Free Speech TV, 9410 Link TV, and on DirecTV Channel 375. And we're video and audio podcasting at democracynow.org. As we turn now to some of the sounds and voices of Thursday's protest in Gina, Louisiana, as well as the vigil that was held in town Wednesday night.
And we and the black community are all the same people. And we fight against injustices for our people. We did it in the civil rights era, and we made a difference. We're doing it in this era, and we're going to make a difference. And we got generations coming under us that's going to see this, and that'll give them more inspiration to continue to fight.
Now, it's not just about race. They don't care if you're not in that percentage of people that are in the haves. You're one of the have-nots. So we have got to form a strong coalition. And I'm proud of a group that is forming a strong coalition called Stop in Chicago nationwide to fight all the gentrification, displacement. Racism is racism everywhere. It doesn't matter if it's because they're trying to lock our young, our black fine young men up, like these six boys who don't have records, who are excellent athletes, who are also excellent students. It doesn't matter if it's around housing. It's all for the same reason. Low income, they discriminate against you because of your color. It's everywhere. And so Jenna 6 is us, and we are them.
My name is Leonard McCall. I'm here from North Carolina, representing North Carolina Central School of Law. Of course, we had to come down. We totally stand for social justice, equality, and change. Well, it's not even just about North Carolina. It's what does Gina have to do with America in general. You know, the things that we've seen here, even before even considering it being a race issue, I think it's just a justice issue, equality issue, period. You know, you can put any race there, whether it's the majority or the minority. What you see that happen here is just not justice. You know, it's an injustice, and I think it would be a total detriment to society for everyone to sit back and watch something like this happen. You know, and there's no way I'm gonna let something like this happen.
Definitely, this is something that could happen all across the United States. It's something that happens every day, and so this is a great opportunity as a launching point for us to address national issues in regards to racism in our criminal justice system.
And, you know, the speaker just a few minutes ago was talking about the problem they have of the population of black men in prison, and it's that way across the country. It's a problem across the country.
It's a problem in West Michigan. We hear the same stories that you hear in Illinois, that you hear in Gina, Louisiana, that you hear in New York City. They're the same stories. We're just not listening.
Some of the sounds and voices of the protests and vigils held in Gina this week. As we turn now back to the beginning, to a piece we have run earlier, but to recap and to bring us back to the core of the story, we go to Jackie Suen and the original Gina 6 story.
Black girls over there, black boys right here. Some black people standing right here, a couple. All the band geeks right there. White folks under the tree, and then you might, it's like me.
Jesse Beard, a freshman in high school and one of the Gina 6, took us to where the nooses were hung.
One day, about the first, second day, we started riding the bus, me and Robert. And we came through and I seen something hanging in. I told Robert, he looked at it. He's like, them nooses right there. He was getting mad. I started getting mad. By the time everybody came, they were trying to cut him down.
Robert Bailey, 17 years old and a safety receiver for the school football team, is another of the Gina 6 facing life behind bars. He described his reaction to the nooses.
It was early in the morning. I seen them hanging. I'm thinking the KKK, you know. Hanging nooses, they want to hang somebody. Real nooses, the ones you see on TV are the kind of nooses with it. The ones they play in the movies, and they were hanging all the people, you know, and that thing drop, that was kind of nooses. I know somebody white that hunting nooses in the tree, you know. I don't know what other way to put it, but, you know, I was disappointed. You know, we do little pranks, you know, toilet paper, that's a prank, you know what I'm saying? Paper all over the square, and all the pranks they used to do, that's pranks. Nooses hanging there, nooses ain't no prank.
The school superintendent dismissed the nooses as a prank, and after 3 days suspension, the three white students who hung the nooses were allowed back to school. Casepla Bailey, Robert's mother, said the school did not inform the parents of the incident.
The school didn't tell me. I didn't know that it happened, so therefore I didn't call to find out what happened on that particular day.
To Casepla Bailey, the meaning of the nooses was clear.
It meant hatred to the other race. It meant that we're going to kill you, you're going to die. You know, it sent a message. This is not the place for you to sit. this is not your damn tree. Do not sit here. You know, you are to remain in your place, know your place, and stay in your place. You're out of your boundaries. And the first thing now that the sheriff department or that the chief of police want to say that, as well as the superintendent, one had nothing to do with the other. Now, come on now.
Most people we spoke to in Gina's white community, however, see no connection between the students' charges and race. Barbara Murphy, the town librarian, claims there isn't a race problem in Gina.
We don't have a race problem. It's not black against white. It's crime. The nurses, I don't even know why they were there, what they were supposed to mean. There's pranks all the time of one type or another going on. And just didn't seem to be racist to me.
A few days after the nooses were hung, the entire black student body staged an impromptu demonstration, crowding underneath the tree during lunch hour. Justin Purvis, the student who first asked to sit underneath the tree, described how the protest came about.
It was like the first beginning, and the cop said, y'all want to go stand under the tree? And we said, yeah. And they said, if you go, I'll go. If you go, I'll go. So one person went, next person went, everybody else just went.
The school responded to the protest by calling police and the district attorney. At an assembly the same day, the district attorney, Reed Walters, accompanied by armed policemen, addressed the students. Substitute teacher Michelle Rogers, one of the few black teachers at the school, was there. She recalls the DA's words to the assembled high schoolers.
The kids didn't say anything. They were listening. The kids were quiet. And so, you know, District Attorney Reed Walters, you know, proceeded to tell those kids that I can end your lives with the stroke of a pen. And the kids were just was like in awe that District, you know, Reed Walters would tell these kids that. He held a pen in his hand and told those kids that, see this pen in my hand, I can end your lives with the stroke of a pen.
A series of incidents followed throughout the fall. In October, a black student was beaten for entering a private all-white party. Later that month, a white student pulled a gun on a group of black students at a gas station, claiming self-defense. The black students wrestled the gun away and reported the incident to police. They were charged with assault and robbery of the gun. No charges were ever filed against the white students in either incident. Then, in late November, someone tried to burn down the high school, creating even more tension. 4 days later, a white student was allegedly attacked in a school fight. The victim was taken to hospital and released shortly with a concussion. He attended a school function that evening. Six black students were charged with attempted second-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder on charges that leave them facing between 20 and 100 years in jail. The defendants, ranging in age from 15 to 17, had their bonds set at between $70,000 and $138,000. The attack was written up in the local paper as fact, and DA Reed Walters published a statement in which he said, "When you are convicted, I will seek the maximum penalty allowed by law."
Yes, we have come today to stand against what we consider to be a great evil. We pray that you would be.
Since their arrest, the defendants' families have been speaking out and fighting for the release of their sons. Two of the six, including Michael Bell, who was recently convicted, were unable to make bond and have spent close to 7 months in jail to date.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
Casepla Bailey began writing letters to state and national agencies, including the Department of Justice, immediately after the charges were filed.
The first thing was devastation. You know, I was down when it first happened. You know, I was very devastated. I was hurt, upset, angry, mad, frustrated. You know, I had so many emotions, crying a lot of nights, you know, trying to figure out, where can I go from here? You know, a lot of times when you're backed into a corner, you're backed into a wall, you come out, naturally, you're going to come out fighting. You know, you're not going to, you're either going to fall and die, or you're going to come out fighting. You know, I'm just sending out these letters to anyone that would have a, you know, a listening ear, and to anyone that I, you know, I thought that would, you know, might help the situation. That's how I fight back, you know, by putting the pen to the paper. They want to take these kids, my son, as well as all these other children, lock them up, throw away the key. You know, that's a tradition for black males. So they want to keep that tradition going because they want to keep institutionalized slavery alive and well.
At a friendly pickup game of football, Casepla's son Robert shows off the skills that made him a star player of the high school football team. Robert was in jail for over 2 months before his mother was able to raise the money for her son's bond, using three pieces of property from different family members. 17-year-old Robert Bailey has no criminal record.
I ain't got no criminal record, nothing. I ain't got no probation, community service, or nothing. Nothing like that. DA, he ain't out to find the truth. That's what DA is for, to after find the truth, of the case. He just, you know, trying to put me up on the jail cell. For your life. It's 50 years, they 25 to 100 years. You just say, well, 20 years fell to me.
Robert wasn't the only one with a promising future. All of the Gina Six were athletes, and five of the six were on the high school football team. Marcus Bell, the father of 17-year-old Michael Bell, has a stack of scholarship offers for his son.
LSU, Southern Miss, Ole Miss, University of New York.
Michael is a star running back and a strong student who is being actively scouted by a number of colleges.
Well, we're not blaming the victim for the charges or none of that. The DA is a racist DA. You know, I'm not calling him out for being a racist. I'm calling him out as being a racist due to his track record. The reason we is taking a stand for our kids for what he not doing is right, cause, you know, we tired of it. You know, cause if he, you know, we sit down, lay back, and let him railroad our kids too, he gonna continue to do that to black people in this town. You know, so we have to take a stand now. Either somebody take a stand now. If not, it gonna be, he gonna continue to fill the prisons up with black people more and more.
Mr. Bell believes that his son is learning a valuable lesson from this experience.
One of the best lessons that my son could learn, that's one of the best lessons, to know what it is to be black now. You know, if this don't teach him that what it is to be black now, I don't know what will. But he's 17 now, you know. He got a lot of life, you know, ahead of him. And the day he set foot out of jail, I'm going to tell him. I'm going to tell him again. You know what it is to be black now. Here it is.
For Democracy Now!, this is Jackie Suen reporting from Gina, Louisiana.
That report from Gina, as we end in Gina with Casepla Bailey and Tina Jones. What happens next? Casepla.
Well, what happens next is to continue to fight, to continue to support one another, and to continue to make noise. No justice, no peace from this point on.
And Tina Jones.
I'll be attending, along with Al Sharpton, in Washington to speak with Congress. So we want all y'all to pray and hope things turn out for the best in that situation with meeting them, and continue to fight with us.
I want to thank you both very much for being with us, Tina Jones and Casepla Bailey in Gina, Louisiana, as we wrap up today's broadcast. If you'd like a copy of the show, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke and Sharif Abdelkaddous and Aaron Mate and Anjali Kamat and Jeffrey Hagerman, Steve Martinez, Nicole Salazar, Kari Mache, Mike DeFilippo, Miguel Nogueira, our engineer. Special thanks also to Becca Staley and Dennis Moynihan and Rebecca Silver, John Randolph, Jose Miranda, Laura Shipley. We also want to thank Rick Rowley and Jackie Suen in Gina, Louisiana. I'm Amy Goodman. DemocracyNow.org is our website. Thanks so much for joining us.